Wake up, America. Time to stump the expert. Each week at this time, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to information, please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company will send you $10 in war stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Brower. Ladies and gentlemen, Information, Please continues as usual, impromptu and unrehearsed, offering tonight as its quartet of experts John Kieran, Franklin P. Adams, and Oscar Levant, who are here with us in our New York studios, and the Hollywood poobah, Gregory Ratoff, who is now hard at work on the motion picture Russia, which he is directing for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now, Mr. Ratoff is sitting in a special West Coast fur-lined studio within sound of my voice, and he will ring a bell whenever he wants to say anything. Mr. Ratoff, will you please ring your bell? I'll ring it with emphasis now. That's very good. Now, our first question. Our first question comes from Patricia Huntley of Biltmore Forest, North Carolina. And it's a question about rivers. On what river might you sail from one of these cities to the others? I'll give you the route. Logansport to Terre Haute to Vincennes. On what river would you do your sailing, Mr. Levant?
You're all in Indiana. Would that be the Ohio River?
No, it would not. Mr. Adams? Were you going to say the Ohio River, Mr. Adams? Mr. Kieran?
From Logansport
to Terre Haute to Vincennes.
It's the Pennsylvania Railroad, that I know.
It's a river.
The Wabash.
The Wabash is right. If you'd come in just a little early, we've got an okay on that one. How about this one? Nizhny Novgorod to Wait till I get... I just started, Radoff. I haven't even got on board boat. Nizhny Novgorod...
Well, I'm excited because I know the answer.
What is the answer?
It is the river Volga. Ehe-yuchnem.
You remember that?
That's where I was born.
Were you born on the Volga?
I was born in a town called Samara. Now it is Kuybyshev.
Yeah, it's improved. Yes, the route that I was going to describe, Gregory, just to bring these things back to you, is Nizhny Novgorod to Kazan to Astrakhan.
Yes, that's still Volga.
Yes, that's still Volga. By the way, Mr. Ratoff, do you know whether Nizhny Novgorod is still called by that name?
No, it is now called Maxim Gorky.
Yes, after whom?
After Maxim Gorky.
Very good. Now, how about this one?
Keep. I'd like to say one more word about Volga.
I have no doubt
that you will. That is the river on which the Stalingrad is. You remember Stalingrad?
You bet. It's an immortal river and an immortal city.
It's neat, but not Volga.
How about this one? Brownsville to Eagle Pass to Albuquerque. On what river, Mr. Kieran?
Rio Grande.
The Rio Grande is right, yes. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Now, how about this one? This comes from Saul Jacobson of New York. In what play or movie do you find these characters? Now, all these characters, Mr. Ratoff, you'll be happy to know, are Russian characters. And they're all in threes. They're trios of characters. Three Russians who were unhappy in a provincial town. In what play or movie would you find them?
Oh, Three Sisters.
Three Sisters. Mr. Ratoff, what were you going to say?
Well, Levant is always taking away from me everything.
Well, I can see him. I can see him quick over here. Mr. Ratoff, who wrote The Three Sisters?
Anton Chekhov.
Very good. Now, how about three Russians who were happy in Paris and Constantinople? Mr. Levant.
Ninotchka.
Yes, the three Russians in Ninotchka.
Yeah, that was Lubitsch, Garbo, and Ratoff.
Do you remember those characters, Mr. Ratoff?
Yes, but certain reasons, I don't mention any more Ninotchka.
You don't mention Ninotchka? By the way, is that pronounced Ninotchka or Ninotchka, Mr. Ratoff?
Ninotchka.
Ninotchka, I thought they were. By the way, if you want to get the names, I'll give them to you, and don't correct my accent, will you, Mr. Ratoff? Bulyanov, Ironov, and Kopalsky. Remember them now?
Yes.
How about three Russians who found happiness on Long Island? Mr. Levant.
That's his, Gregory Ratov's wife.
Well, she's not three Russians.
And so. And Miramova, in dark eyes, and Ratov's backers all found happiness there.
That's right. Yes, they're the three characters in dark eyes, of which Eugeny Leonovich is one of the authors, play now running on Broadway. How about this one? We got 3 out of 3 on that. Let's see if we can get this one from Ruth H. Roberts of Oxon Hill, Maryland. Can you give the quotation that contains these words? All of these words, by the way, contain the word time. The first is, these are the times. Mr. Adams.
That Try Men's Souls by Mr. Paine.
Yes, Thomas Paine. It's from what one of his books, Mr. Adams?
The American Crisis.
That's quite right. Now is the time. Now is the time, Mr. Levant.
Gee, I see that every day on a slogan. Now's the time to buy war bonds. What's a good idea anyway?
Yes, that's true, but
you can't
criticize that,
even if it's wrong.
No, it's a good sentiment. But
now's
it's not...
the time for all them. Go ahead, let me.
Go ahead, Mr. Adams.
For all good men to come to the aid of their party.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And what about that? When? Who said that? And when?
I don't know who said it. I think probably somebody, Edgar J. Remington or W. H. Underwood.
Yes. So why did? Yes, because it's a sentence that was devised to test the practicability of the first typewriter. That was in 1867. If you care to know, Mr. Adams, it was a chap named Weller, who was a friend of Mr. Scholes, who was the inventor of the first typewriter. Some of the time, Mr. Kieran.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yes, can you give us the quotation, Mr. Kieran?
You fool some of the people all the time and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time.
You bet it.
Yes, you can.
By the way, Mr. Kieran, do you know whether you can actually find those words in any of the Lincoln State papers?
I have never found them.
No, I think that they are quoted in conversation. How about this one from Alex Taylor of Douglaston, Long Island? Now, suppose that you're a host at a party and you entertain your guests with the following. What are they? The first things that you entertain them with are ikra and payusnaya. Mr. Radov.
Now, I know the answer, but ask me once more.
Well, Mr. Radov, you're the host at a party, and you entertain your guests with ikra and payusnaya.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
You're entertaining them with the caviar.
With caviar, yes. And what do those two words mean?
Ikra and payusnaya?
Yeah.
It's the two kinds of caviar.
Yeah, what kinds are they?
Red and black.
Well, one is pressed.
One is what?
You see, one is pressed.
Pressed?
And another is fresh.
As I understand it, one is fine and the other is coarse. You think I'm
wrong?
Well,
they're different in price, you know.
Yes. Now suppose that you entertain your guests with Pommery and Vintner. Pommery and Vintner, Mr. Kieran.
Well, it'd be wine.
What kind?
French.
Champagne.
Pommery
would be one.
Is French champagne.
Yes, and Vintner?
Well, that just doesn't mean anything to me.
Is that English?
That's a wine handler.
Mr. Ratto?
Wintner sounds very German, very German.
No, it really isn't.
Is it English?
It's the opposite of German. It's American.
Yeah?
Vintner is domestic. It's a domestic champagne known as Vintner Champagne. Pommery would be French champagne. Well, we got half of that right, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Ratoff?
That's what Mr. Ratoff
is from Vintner, American by German descent.
No, I think not. What did you say, Mr. Adams?
The Vintner of our discontent.
Oh, goodness gracious. How about this one? Dance and show. What would you be entertaining your guests with if you gave them dance and show? Mr. Levant.
It's usually a rally. I mean, one of those benefits. They give you a dance, and then they give you a show.
No, not exactly.
Why not? That's what we always do.
Well, I think you'd be entertained with the... winsome young maidens, would you not be? Or
well, you don't want me to dance with Mr. Adams, do you?
Well, dance and show girls, I guess, is what is meant. I guess we got 2 out of 3 on that. How about this one from James I. Brown of St. Paul, Minnesota? This is a musical question. To whom was each of the stories described in this music told? Let's have the first. Mr. Levant.
That's Scheherazade. By Rimsky-Korsakov.
Well, and to whom were the stories?
She was
told?
Telling it to the guy of Baghdad, the big man, the Sultan.
Yes, the Sultan of Baghdad and the Arabian Nights. That's quite right. Do you remember his name?
She kept him up 365 days, and I don't know what happened to him after
that. 1,000, I think it was.
1,000?
Yeah, 1,000 or 1,001. Shahryar was the name of the Sultan. We remember her name, but never his. Now, how about the second musical narrative? Mr. Levant again.
Songs my mother taught me.
And who, therefore, the story...
Dvorak.
Yes, the story is being told to...
To, well, my mother used to keep me up with those songs.
To told you to me. Mr. Radoff?
My mother.
No. No, the story is being told to me.
Get
songs
off that one knee,
Radoff. How about the third and last? Mr. Levant.
Peter and a Wolf.
Well, whom is the story being told to?
To the music publisher.
No, in this case, to whom is the narration? Mr. Radoff?
Go ahead.
To children.
Yes, that's right. That's how the narrative of Peter and the Wolf by Prokofiev begins, my dear children. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Our 57 Varieties reporter, Ben Grauer, is about to cast a little light on the brighter side of point rationing.
You're probably discovering already that rationing isn't going to be nearly as difficult as it sounded at first. Remember, it has worked successfully in England for quite some time. And after all, we Americans pride ourselves on being quick to catch on to things. Besides, we'll all have to agree that rationing is a good, sound way of seeing that everyone gets his share. Of course, we won't have as wide a choice as we used to, so we'll just have to use a little Yankee ingenuity in planning our meals. And that's where Heinz hopes to be of service, with good foods and good ideas on how to use them. Through our products and advertising, we'll try to help keep the American table interesting and appetizing. While today we may not have as many products on grocers' shelves, you may be sure that whatever bears the name Heinz will be the finest that care, skill, and quality ingredients can make it. This has been true for 74 years. We expect nothing to change that Heinz tradition.
Well spoken, Mr. Grauer. And now we'll go on with a question from Roy Pascal of Jamaica, Long Island. Identify the plays that have these locations, these settings. The first begins in a public square and ends in a tomb. What play? Mr. Akiran.
That would be Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, Romeo and Juliet. That's quite right. Now, here's one that begins in a cellar and ends in a cellar. Practically no progress at all. Mr. Levant?
It could be Arsenic and Old Lace, if you had an extra scene at the beginning.
And an extra scene at the end. Yes. Some of the invisible scenes take place offstage in a cellar, but actually none of the visible ones do. Mr. Radoff, I should think you'd know that one.
Oh, at the Lower Depths.
Yes, that's
by
right.
By Gorky.
That's right. The Lower Depths, that's right.
No
but I'm afraid we got that one wrong. Now, how about this? The first one begins on a ship and ends in a zoo. Begins on a ship and ends in a zoo. Mr. Levant?
That's that play about After You're Dead. Leslie Howard was in it.
I don't think so.
No,
I may be mistaken.
Good.
I was thinking of Eugene O'Neill's The Hairy Ape, mm-hmm. which does begin on a ship and ends in a zoo. I think that sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Pascal and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, courtesy of the H.J. Hines Company. And now a question from Mrs. S.H. Wright of Atlanta, Georgia. What was or is the rank of these noblemen? These are real people, historical people. The first was bald, and in consequence of that, he popularized wigs. Who was that? And what rank did he have? Being bald, he popularized wigs.
Jack Benny?
Well, he's a great showman, but not a nobleman. How about, it was King Louis XIII who was completely bald, and he didn't invent wigs, but he made them fashionable. And later on, Louis XIV, who became bald, I think sometime in his middle age, made wigs fashionable for the same reason. Now, here's another one. He was a radical and a revolutionist. And also a nobleman. What rank was he and who was he? Mr. Kieran.
Tolstoy.
A radical and a revolutionist?
He
was a count, all right. I wouldn't call Tolstoy a revolutionist. Mr. Radoff, you're an expert on things Russian. What would you say?
Well, it may be Chicherin.
That's true.
Yes, that's true. He was
very
a noble
good.
Family.
Good.
An even more famous one was Prince Peter Kropotkin, who was an anarchist and a revolutionary. How about a nobleman who established a series of hurdle records? Mr. Kieran.
David George Cecil Brownlow, Lord Burley.
That's perfect, Mr. Kieran.
Olympic 400-meter high-hurdle champion.
That's right. I had to remember all those names, Mr. Kieran.
Because he is a swell fellow and a great athlete.
Have you ever met him?
Yes, I have.
Wasn't he in charge of the Olympic Games some time ago?
No, he was in charge of the British team that came to our... Olympic Games here in 1932. He's a wonderful fellow.
Yes.
Everybody very fond of him.
Lord Burley. And he must be about how old now, would you say?
He would be now around, I should say 35, 38,
yes.
40.
And probably serving in the war.
He is.
How about this one from Louise Windsor of Dallas, Texas? A 7-year interval played an important part in the lives of these characters. Who are they? Here's the first. Who expected to marry Rachel at the end of 7 years? Mr. Levant?
Jacob,
yes.
Yeah. He got Leah instead.
He got Leah. He married the elder sister first.
He got them both.
Yes, if you wait long enough.
He worked 7 more years.
He worked 7 more years. Whom did he work for, Mr. Cairns?
Isaac.
No, I don't think it was Isaac.
Well, their father.
His father-in-law.
I know his name. Wait a minute.
Laban.
Laban is right, yes. Yeah. Who expected to rejoin Sonia at the end of 7 years?
Ding, ding.
I know that.
You don't get a ding-ding, Mr. Levant.
That's in Crime and Punishment.
That's quite right.
Yeah.
And who was the person?
The boy who commits
about?
Murder in the first part, and she's sentenced to Siberia. Go ahead, Ratov.
Raskolnikov.
That's right.
Yes. What was his first name, Mr. Ratov?
Joe.
Raskolnikov, first name.
Oh, well, that name is big enough not to need a first name. I don't know what it was.
I don't know myself.
I don't know either. How about this one? Who expected to marry Sally when his 7 long years are out? Who expected to marry Sally, Mr. Kieran?
I think that's in the Sally in Our Alley.
That's right.
In the song, yeah. Which, by the way, was written, I think, about 300 years ago.
I think it was an 18th century song.
Well, 200 years ago, then. It was written by the Englishman who wrote either Rule Britannia or God Save the Queen.
One of them. His name was? Henry Carey.
Henry Carey, that's Carey. Right.
Yes, and the one who expected to marry Sally is the one who
The Apprentice.
The Apprentice, yes, the little apprentice in the... song, Sally in Our Alley. And how about this one? Whom did each of the following succeed as ruler or leader? Now, the first is Louis the 18th. Whom did he succeed, Mr. Kieran?
He succeeded Louis the 16th.
No, he did not.
Louis the 18th in France?
Louis the 18th in France, yes.
Well, in royal line.
No, I don't mean in royal line. I mean actually
you mean Napoleon?
In time. Napoleon the first. That's quite right.
Well, I don't want to quibble.
Well, he did succeed him in time. Mr. Ratov?
Yes, I wanted to say Napoleon. One fellow shouted to me from the audience.
Did you really want to say Napoleon, Mr. Ratov?
I wanted to say Napoleon.
Well, go ahead, say it now.
Napoleon!
Good, all right. Whom did Bill Terry succeed as leader? Bill Terry. Mr. Levant?
John McGraw.
Yes, he succeeded him as manager, and did he succeed anybody else as first baseman?
Yes, Kelly.
Yes, George Kelly. Yeah. How about Boris Godunov? Whom did he succeed?
Somebody the Terrible.
Mr. Ratov?
Ivan the Terrible.
Who?
Ivan the Terrible.
Ivan the Terrible? Not according to my information.
Wait, I think...
Mr. Levant?
Feodor?
That's right. Mm. That's right.
Ah!
Say, he's good, isn't he? Yes. Tsar Feodor. That's quite right. Good work. How about this one?
Kib, yep. Let's take the lights off my audience. They're giving me the wrong advice.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, one question that has consistently stumped the experts on Information Please and everywhere else is, how do the ladies handle so many war jobs and household jobs with such ease? Perhaps you have the answer, Mr. Grauer.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman. Today, Mrs. America has the added duty of war work that may range from a few volunteer hours to a full-time factory job. Yet she still has the task of planning hearty, wholesome meals for her family. Now, that's a large order, but American women are taking it in stride. In many countries, they've established community kitchens to give housewives time for war work. But in America, we've always had community kitchens. The thousands of food processing plants that for years have been packing extra hours into every tin and jar. For instance, soup takes an average of 4 hours to cook properly. But Heinz has saved the housewife all but a few minutes of that time. And this saving is repeated in scores of other dishes that we and other food manufacturers prepare for you. Perhaps that's one reason why American women have been able to contribute so much to war work. We at Heinz watch their soup for them and fix their baby's food and put up their pickles. And we'll continue to save thousands of hours of kitchen time for the ladies. Bless them.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. And now a question from W. Walter Jackson of Muskogee, Oklahoma. Give the English name, which is the equivalent of the foreign name, indicated by these diminutives. And the first is Sasha. Mr. Ratov.
Alexander.
Alexander. That's quite right. And is Sasha ever used in the feminine, Mr. Ratov?
Yes. Alexandra.
Alexandra, that's quite right. How about Gretchen? Gretchen. Mr. Adams?
Margaret.
Margaret is right. Lulu. Mr. Ratoff?
Elizabeth.
Lulu what? For Elizabeth? I don't think so.
Lulu for Lydia. Lulu you... for anything if you like her.
Yes, but particularly if you like Louise. Lulu is the diminutive
Louise,
of
yeah,
Louise.
That's okay.
Okay.
Take that light off the audience.
Thank you, Mr. Ratoff. Now, that gives us 2 out of 3 on that. And we have to get 2 out of 3 on this one from Marion Mahoney of Lowell, Massachusetts. Identify the female fictional characters known by each of these male names. The first is Joe.
What?
Joe. J-O. Joe.
That's her last name?
No, that was the first name. Mr. Adams?
I think that's somebody by Louisa M. Alcott.
You're right, Mr. Adams. And what book would you find,
probably
Joe?
In Little Women.
Yes, and what was her full name?
I don't know. Probably Josephine. I never read it.
I mean her last name. Oh, you should
begins
know
begins with M.
Oh, goodness gracious. You don't know the names of the Little Women? Never read it? You should read it. It's a very good book. Mr. Ratoff?
March.
Say, you have a book there, Mr. Ratoff. I don't believe it. Yes, March
no.
is right. Joe March, quite right. Why, you should be ashamed of yourself, gentlemen. How about this one? Young Charlie. It's a female character who is known by the male name, Mr. Levant.
That's in Hitchcock's picture, Shadow of Doubt.
That's quite right, yes. Yeah. The heroine in Shadow of a Doubt, Young Charlie. How about...
I haven't seen it yet.
How about Lou?
What?
Lou. Mr. Adams?
That was the lady... That's known as.
That's quite right. And where would you find her, Mr. Adams?
In a poem by Robert W. Service.
Known as?
I don't know what the name of it is.
Mr. Kieran? Mr. Levant?
I know the poem.
Shooting of Dan McGrew. Shooting of Dan McGrew. God, how ghastly she looks through her rouge, the lady that's known as Lou. Well, we got,
The lady who kissed him and pinched his poke was the lady who...
That's known as Lou.
The woman
that's
who,
quite right. Now, the next is another musical question. It comes from Esther Wright Erickson of Seattle, Washington. What is the source, gentlemen, of each of these flute solos that are going to be played now? We have to get 2 out of 3 on them. Let's have the first. Mr. Ratoff, was that your bell ringing?
Yes, that's my bell ringing.
Yes?
And that's what... from... Tchaikovsky's ballet.
That's quite right.
Sleeping Beauty.
I think it was called that. Who danced it? Do you remember recently?
Recently? Oh, that's the girl I'm in love with. I hope my wife doesn't hear it. Baronova.
Well, now,
Irina Baronova.
My information may differ from yours. Is it from a ballet called Aurora's Wedding?
Well, Aurora's Wedding, that's what they call it abroad. Originally, it's Sleeping Beauty.
I see. And the part that was being played was what?
Of the princess.
Bluebird Variations. Does that come back to your mind now, Mr. Ratoff?
Yes, it comes back to me.
All right.
Still the same thing.
Same thing. Now, how about the second of these flute solos? Mr. Levant.
Well, John ought to know that one.
I should. I do.
Do you know it, Mr. Kieran?
Caro. Go ahead.
Caro Nome.
Yes.
From Verdi's opera...
Rigoletto.
Caronome che il mio cuore.
Prima
festi palpitar.
Very good, Mr. Kieran. I bet you didn't know the Italian, Mr. Ratoff, did you?
Yes, I knew it.
All right. We can't contradict you 3,000 miles.
I don't speak Italian during the war.
And now the third and last.
That doesn't leave me with any language at all.
Well, what are you talking about? What about Russians and English and Chinese?
Give our poor flautist a chance, Mr. Ratoff. Mr. Levant?
I think that's Brahms.
It is indeed.
The Fourth Symphony.
The Fourth Symphony.
Play it again.
Would you like to hear it again?
I like the tune.
All right, let's have it again, just for Mr. Ratoff's sake. Would you do that for us? Mr. Ratoff?
A very familiar music, but I don't know where it's from. Sounds like one of the symphonies by Tchaikovsky.
Mr. Ratoff, may I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
You ought to listen to this program. It's a very good one. Mr. LeBan.
I heard it last week.
Mr. LeBan just told us it was Brahms' fourth.
Ratov just said it was Tchaikovsky.
Was he right?
LeBan was right and you were wrong.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, well, that's all right. I'm sorry. Anybody's entitled to make a mistake now and then. Well, that gave us 3 out of 3. Now, how about this one? From Arthur H. Osman of Plainfield, New Jersey. Identify these quotations about bands, B-A-N-D-S. The first is, a band of angels, a band of angels.
Tommy Dorsey.
That's a very nice compliment, but I don't think it's a quotation. Band of angels, Mr. Kieran, is
that
something
that's in a song that we all sing.
It is, that's right.
I'm trying to think of Hark, band of angels.
Honor Christian soldiers.
No, no. I looked over Jordan, and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home, a band of angels coming after me, and so forth.
Coming for to carry me home.
That's the one, Mr. Adams. All right, that's one wrong. The bestest band what I am. The bestest band what I am, Mr. Adams.
That's from Alexander's Ragtime Band.
That's exactly right. And finally, a band of exiles. Mr. Kieran.
When a band of exiles moored their bark on the wild New England shore.
And that's
Felicia Hammond's The Landing of the Pilgrims.
Landing of the Pilgrims.
Pilgrim Fathers.
Now that gives us 2 bands out of 3 bands and sends us on to a question from Miss Maxine R. Garrett of New Orleans. Which 2 members of these families couldn't get along and why? And the first family is the Baxter family. The Baxter family. Mr. Levant?
There's 2 answers to that. One of them is the Jody boy down in Yearling. Those were Baxters. That isn't the right answer. You want that young kid by Talkington, I think. Something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Willie Baxter.
17.
That's right. Yes. Now, Mr. Adams, can you straighten us out? Mr. Levant started us.
That is William Sylvanus Baxter and his sister.
And his sister, yes. Which of them was the younger?
The sister.
Yes, she was 10 and a thorn in the flesh of William Sylvanus. And you'll find those characters in which novel by Talkington?
17.
17. Now, how about the Kirsanov family?
You're getting like Ratov. I said 17 a long time ago.
I'm so sorry. Kirsanov, the Kirsanov family. What 2 members of that family couldn't get along and why?
Imagine both of them.
Does that come back to you, Mr. Ratov?
Yes, I remember. It's from Turgenev.
That's right.
2 brothers, but I cannot remember the name of that story.
Well, it's fathers and sons.
Okay. Ah, yes.
Remember
it now? Turgenev's fathers and sons.
Yes. The father
you know,
was...
Kip.
Yes.
Kip,
yeah.
I've got this telephone on my ears, and it's driving me crazy.
You've only got another 30 seconds, Gregory. Just
the
hang
next
on.
Time, if I go on information, please, if you still like me after this sensational performance, I'll come to New York.
All right. See what you can do with this one. The Helmer family. The Helmer.
Helmer?
Yes. Mr. Ratov?
Helmer family.
That's right.
Don't know.
Okay. That's a perfect answer.
Isn't
Mr.
that
Kieran?
Ibsen?
Pardon?
Isn't that Ibsen?
That's quite right. What play?
Is that The Enemy of the People?
No, it's The Doll's House.
Oh, The Doll's House.
Nora and Thorwald. I think that sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Miss Garrett and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, courtesy of the H.J. Hines Company. And the H.J. Hines Company has tonight paid out $114 in war bonds and stamps and 2 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mm-hmm. Mr. Ratov, many thanks. Next week, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Levant, and Mr. Adams, as our regulars, will join forces with Jan Struther, the creator of Mrs. Miniver, the screen version of which has just won a majority of the Academy Awards. Remember, listeners, send your questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City.